Blog Talk Radio.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day.
Lift every voice and sing, let heaven ring, ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies resound of dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun. March on till victory is won. The road we trod, the chasing rock held in the days when hope unborn had died, yet with a steady beat, as at our weary feet,
come to the place from which our Father.
Lift every voice and rejoicing, right high as the listening sky, should resound out the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, march on till victory is won. Stony the road we trod, chasing what fell in the days when hope unborn had died, yet with a steady beat as at our weary feet, come to the place from which our fathers died. We from the gloomy past, till now we stand at last, where the white gleaming star is cast.
To the switchboard and just talk to her from that way. You won't be able to do anything. You just have to talk until 8 o'clock.
Okay. And I'll be in, and she's on there.
Yeah, she's on there now.
Hey, Kenza, can you hear me? Kenza. Kenza, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you just now.
Okay, yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. All right. I guess we're going to have to do it. For whatever reason, my computer just shut down today.
Okay.
So we're just going to have to do it like this. And so we are into the show. It took 11 minutes. I'm going to have my daughter here. She's going to... for the listening audience, sorry about the technical difficulties we're having right now. I'm going to thing might go on. I'm going to go into our ancestral profile. I'm going to have my daughter read that, and so it's going to be on Sojourner 2. So here we go.
Born 1797 and died 1883, a former slave, Sojourner Truth became an outspoken advocate for abolition, temperance, and civil and women's rights in the 19th century. Her Civil War work earned her an invitation to meet President Abraham Lincoln in 1864. Truth was born Isabella Bomfrey, a slave in Dutch-speaking Ulster County, New York, in 1797. She was bought in both wartime and subjected to harsh physical labor and violent punishment. In her teens, she was united with another slave with whom she had five children beginning in 1815. In 1827, a year before New York's law freeing slaves would take effect, Truth ran away with her infant Sophia to a nearby abolitionist family, the Van Wagoners. The family bought her freedom for $20 and helped her successfully sue for the return of her five-year-old son, Peter, who was illegally sold in slavery in Alabama. Truth moved to New York City in 1828, where she worked for a local minister. By the early 1830s, she participated in the religious revivals that were sweeping the state and became a charismatic speaker. In 1843, she declared that the Spirit called on her to preach the truth, renaming herself to be Sojourner Truth. As an itinerant preacher, Truth met abolitionist William Lloyd Garrison and Frederick Douglass. Garrison's anti-slavery organization encouraged Truth to give speeches about the evils of slavery. She never learned to read or write. In 1850, she dictated that would become... She dictated what would become her autobiography, The Narrative of Sojourner Truth, to Olive Gilbert, who assisted in its publication. Truth survived on sales of the book, which also got her a national recognition. She met women's rights activists, including Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony, as well as temperance advocates for both causes she quickly championed. In 1851, Truth began a lecture tour that included a women's rights conference in Akron, Ohio, where she delivered her famous anti-woman speech. In it, she challenged prevailing notions of racial and gender inferiority and inequality by reminding listeners of her combined strength, Truth's military call, and female status. Truth ultimately split with Douglass, who believed suffrage for former enslaved men should come before women's suffrage. She thought both should occur simultaneously. During the 1850s, Truth settled in Battle Creek, Michigan, where three of her daughters lived. She continued speaking nationally and helping slaves escape to freedom. When the Civil War started, Truth urged young men to join the Union cause and organize supplies for black troops. After the war, she was honored with an invitation to the White House and became involved with the Freedmen's Bureau, helping freed slaves find jobs and build new lives. While in Washington, D.C., she lobbied against segregation, and in the mid-1860s, when a streetcar conductor tried to violently block her from riding, she ensured his arrest and won her subsequent case. In the late 1860s, she collected thousands of signatures on a petition to provide former slaves with land, though Congress never took early action. Nearly blind and deaf for the life, she spent her final years in Michigan.
Oh, thank you, Lex. Thank you for
that. Dr. Rogers.
And so, hey, Dr. Rogers, we hear something in the background. Hello, Kendra. Can you hear me?
Peace. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry about this. This is hopefully I get this straightened out in a little bit, but it something that came up on my computer earlier, and when they want you to get a new protection or something like that, and I hit no, and
uh-huh.
all of a sudden this all stuff came up, and then I'm like, wow, I can't use it. And
oh, wow.
So it happened to me once before and this and that. But, here we are. Okay. I guess I want to kind of introduce you you're a lyrical, what is a travoyer of lyrical love and artist. What's it say on it? What's the title? You're always giving this wonderful advice.
I am a purveyor of lyrical love.
Purveyor?
Yes. I purvey lyrical love. That's what I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just I was just saying. Well, I see that in I guess what I was thinking, like I look at some of the things that you write, and it just throws me, because when I look at a lot of the things that's going on, and you do address a lot of the issues that people talk about that's kind of plaguing the community here and there, and you put a very common sense, strong point of view, and from a woman's point of view, a strong black woman's point of view, and I really was looking forward this month being Women's Month, and to get as many powerful women on there as possible and stuff. So getting you to come on here and just share your wisdom that you put that knowledge out all the time. And, like I said, I'm just looking forward to having some conversations, some dialogue in regards to some of the other things that you were talking about. Now, I was reading some stuff that you put out there, and you were talking about are you healthy? Have you ever experienced your adult self healthy? Most people in America are not healthy. Healthy people are very difficult to control. So I'm trying to figure, what are you saying there? We're not so healthy in America. Is this part of our mental thing or combination of everything? I could keep reading. If you remember this, I can't remember which day it was, but you got so much out there, so when you talk about critical thinking, impulse control, you just put everything out there, and I'm just trying to, I get it to a degree, and then I was reading, listening to something else you were talking about, love, and self-love, and how love is different, and the love that you think or that I have for you and you have for me could be different from our experiences and all of that. And I just want you to touch on some of those points that you were just talking about on social and media that you put out there.
Okay. First of all, thank you for having me. Thank you for inviting me and asking me to even speak on some of these topics. I appreciate that. I appreciate you making room for me to speak. I'll say it that way, because I think you understand that, you're making room for me to speak and inviting me on your show. I will start off with the first thing you asked about, America is one of the most unhealthy nations on the planet. We consume almost 3/4 of the world's pharmaceuticals, the world, one country. We are the largest consumer nation. A lot of times we believe that we are healthy because we are existing, because we are living, because we are propped up on pharmaceutical medications that allow us to function on a daily basis. I believe 2/3 of Americans are on some form of prescription drug for some ailment and or disease. So in that sense, we're not a healthy nation. You were to be without drugs, most of the people who are on these drugs would revert, die within 14 days, oftentimes to a month. That's something to think about. A lot of people are literally being kept alive by pharmaceutical drugs. If the prescription pipeline were to be cut off, people would die. So I think it's very, very important to understand what health is and to ask yourself, are you healthy? And if your answer to that question is no, what are you doing to acquire health and to maintain a level of health? How can you wean yourself off of some of the things that are contributing to your disease and imbalance? So we often separate things. Like, our original state of being was a holistic state of being. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
We understood the unicity of things and how everything is connected. And in this paradigm we're in the Western world, everything needs to be separated and titled and compartmentalized. And we do that with the mind and the body and the spirit when we're all one thing. And when one thing is out of balance, everything is out of balance. There's no escaping it. Everything affects everything else. If your mind is not in order, it will affect your body. It will create a sickness. If your body is not in order, it will create a sickness. And your body being the conduit through which your spirit and soul operate, if your body is compromised, you cannot receive or relay information as well as if you were not compromised or were healthy. So when we have unhealthy bodies, we have unhealthy minds. There's no way to avoid that connection and that reality, because your body is what you use to operate on this earth. So everything that spirit, soul, universe, whatever you want to call it, communicates through you is being filtered by your body. And if your body is not able to function at a maximum capacity, or at least a relatively good capacity, then all your communication and your output is compromised, you know? So I think it's just really important that we pay attention to our health. I think we get so busy with things that we forget about our bodies. Like, you can't do anything on this planet without a body. If you don't have a body, you're gone. So you can acquire all kinds of things. You can work hard and you can get the best of things, but if you don't have a body, you can't enjoy it. And if your body is compromised, you can't fully enjoy or have access to the things that money has afforded you. So I just think that's a really important thing that we overlook, is like, health is really important, and we get we're disillusioned because of medications and the quote-unquote technological advances that we've been afforded over here. So, yeah.
Well, I'm just kind of wondering. Well, you know, I'm just kind of wondering, you know, when you think about, you know, like, I love just listening to, you know, your quotes, and I wish my daughter was here. She's supposed to, my oldest daughter, I wish she was here, because I wanted her to hear this, and I, you know, so, you know, I'm going to ask her to play this back and listen and so forth, because, you know, we have these relationships, and there was some other stuff you put out there about how people have these relationships, and they look for these people, and they want to try to make themselves be the person that this person wants them to be and stuff, and you went on to say things of like, you know, if they don't want you for who you are, you're not trying to build them up. You need to build yourself up. You need to know yourself first.
You know, you have to love yourself, and you know, getting to know yourself, really know yourself, your real self, having that relationship. So if you could talk about that a little bit, because I think when you have a lot of people, they have so many, we got these young people having these identity crises. You know, when I framed this show, you know, I was looking at a lot of the things that you wrote, and you know, and I put down moving from trauma to triumph and suicide, no, life, yes. And I say that because, one, I mean, the positivity that you put out there, and you address every issue in so many different ways, but it's uplifting, but it's so common sense and to the point, and it's just so spot on. And so I don't know. I just where's your source come from? Is your reading, mom, dad? What put your mindset to this? I mean, this way of thinking.
Wow, that's interesting. I guess I would say that I was kind of born this way. I was kind of born this way, which got me into a certain amount of quote unquote trouble with people.
Yeah,
I've always been. I was raised in an environment that didn't encourage critical thinking, but I went to a school system that encouraged critical thinking. I was a 220 student at Shorewood.
Okay.
Long time ago. And they had just about one of the best educational systems in Wisconsin. When I grew up, all of us, I had two brothers, and we could all read and write before we were four. That was mandatory in our household.
Wow.
That was just what it was. And we learned new words, and for every word we learned, we got a penny. My father had a penny table. The table in the living room had pennies all over it, and every time we could give a new word and give the definition of the word, we would get a penny. But that was back then when you could actually get penny candy, so we were like hood rich.
we would just learn
words. We watched a lot of National Geographic. We had full Encyclopedia Britannica sets, and we just read a lot. And we were a very inquisitive children, but the structure of most African-American black households is not to question parents, is not to question authority, is not to question, you know, the structure, the status quo. Like, you children are to be seen and not to be heard, right? And when you grow up in that environment, but your mind is constantly firing, just nonstop. Your mind is just firing nonstop. Because from an early age, when you can read, you can see things other children don't see.
Right.
So it's just that you have you have access to a different knowledge base.
Right.
Which creates different thoughts, and thoughts are what control our actions and our behavior. And so it's just things I noticed very, very young that things didn't make sense, and that people lie, and things didn't add up to me. And so, you know, questioning adults would get you a whooping or get you yelled at or get, you know what I'm saying? So I just had a lot of questions, and I was always a researcher, and I would, because I could read. So if I had a question, I'd go find it. I'd go find the answer to it. Like, if as an adult, you don't want to address what my concerns are, I can try to find an answer to it some way. I'll go to the library. I'll sit there. I'll get another book. I'll find it out. And so it was that I became well-read at an early age, and I was born, like I said, I just think I was born this way. Like, I just questioned. I questioned a lot of things, and I was called rebellious, and I was called disrespectful, and I was called a whole lot of stuff by a whole lot of people who basically didn't have the answers to give. Or by providing answers to my questions, it would make them reexamine their lives and the things that they wanted me to do. So I just learned very young that people were liars and most adults cannot be trusted. Because they did things that suited them. Yeah. Like, I didn't have this thing where I really believed that you should respect your elders. Because I saw the world that the elders created for us. So it was very difficult for me. It was very difficult for me to just, like, take those blanket statements. Like, I valued integrity and character and people who would show me that they were what they said they were.
Right.
So it caused a lot of problems for me because I was always a thinker. And then you get to a point where, like, you have to suppress the fact that you're a thinker for your own safety, for your own good.
Yeah.
Because people don't like people like you. And so when you learn that people really don't like people like you and that you can get hurt for being who you naturally are, that creates such a conflict. And it creates so much internal pressure that you have to actually pretend to be somebody that you're not just so that you can survive, just so that you can stay safe in your own home and in the world as a whole. So it has been a journey. But it's real. And so when I reflect on that, it's like, dang, like, I am so very proud of myself because I found myself again. You know, I found myself again because for years it was just like, you can't be like this. You can't talk like this. You can't act like this.
Right.
There were so many things that, you know, and then you have social constructs where people say, you know, well, you can't, you talk white if you talk proper, and you want to be like the white kids because you read a lot, and, you know, it was just so much stuff, so much programming that we took for granted as normal that was very, very destructive, and it was very anti everything that I knew myself to be in the inside when I could actually be myself, if that makes sense. So that created a whole nother and this is what I'll get to, how I'll tie it into what you said. Those kinds of things in me, not being able to be myself authentically, not being able to speak my truth to my family members, to my parents, to my friends oftentimes, that created an identity crisis. And I believe wholeheartedly that is the source of most of the identity crisis in children, is they've been fed lies. And they have this awesome BS meter that lets them know, y'all not telling me the truth. And when you are in a world where you don't have access to the answers, but you know that everybody is lying to you, you feel very insecure. Mm-hmm. It is a very unsafe place to be in when you are being lied to as the norm. And you are treated as if you are crazy for not believing the lie.
Right. Man,
so
that
you can
is
trace
just
anxiety, depression.
Uh-huh.
All of these things are symptoms of identity crises that aren't necessarily about me wanting to be somebody else, but no, you forced me to have to be somebody else. And at some point, sometimes people forget who they are because they've played the role so very long.
Most definitely. Wow. Man, you that is serious, and that, you know, and that's, you know what, one of the things that shook me right away when you said, you know, people are lying to you and you have to learn the truth and know the truth for your own safety. You got to ask these questions and you got to search for this knowledge. And the simple fact that you put yourself in that position at a very early age, I mean, your parents encouraged you and you were that free thinker. And I mean, that's powerful in itself. But like I said, or you said, I mean, you went beyond maybe what they wanted to happen and stuff. I mean, because, you know, it opened doors with you reading and doing those different things and stuff like that, and because that's what reading does.
Yeah.
And so when I look at the answer, I mean, the solutions that you talk about, just some of the things that you did during your personal life, we don't need all this technology and all this other stuff that they're trying to add into these schools and do this and do that, if people would pick up some books and just start reading, you know?
Yeah.
And,
see, I got to stop you right there, and I don't mean to cut you off, but with all due respect, but it's more than just reading books, because when you have knowledge in an unguided sense, you know, books and books are always open to interpretation, and we also have to learn to take things in context, and when you don't have guidance, you don't take the proper context for the information.
So that can be very, very dangerous. A lot of religious texts are dangerous because of that, because they haven't been given the proper context by guidance.
Right.
So you have everybody interpreting something and taking their own spin
right.
and viewing it through their own
mm-hmm.
lens according to their own life experiences and preferences and agendas and saying, no, this is what it is. So,
yeah.
you know, people can be, it can be very reckless to just consume knowledge and consume knowledge because you don't understand the practical application of the knowledge. And that can drive you crazy, too. When you know all this stuff but you can't get anything to work for you in your life.
Right.
When you've read a million books and you know the whole 360 and a plus degrees and you know everything, you can recite all the books of the Bible, you've read the Bible 28 times, you've read the Quran,
right.
you've read this, you've read that, you've watched that, but you can't get practical things to work in your own life despite
yeah.
all the knowledge you've consumed. So it gets to a point
yeah.
where people start to be like, well, I've read this and I know this and it's not working. And so that can, you know, drive you to a place of insanity. So it's like we just have to be balanced in things. But I think beneath that all has got to be truth. And we have to get back to a place of truth. Get back to has to first start with us being truthful to ourselves and with ourselves, you know? Like the reason why people can lie to us is because we lie to ourselves.
Yes.
So it's
yeah,
so much
makes,
easier
that,
for us to believe
makes,
deception. You know, because you
well,
respect
you,
your own voice prior to anybody else's, so.
Yes. Yes. So, how do you reach people? I mean, you know, they're lying. They're not being honest about what they're saying, what they're feeling. You know, I mean, you have a family. You know, you bring your kids up. Sons, daughters, and, you know, you have relationship with other, I mean, how do you look at people? I mean, you know, because, you know, I don't know. I'm scared to talk to you. Don't call. No, I'm not. Because I understand, good knows good. And I understand that.
Yeah.
And we have a heart and a love and a passion for our people on this planet. That's why we do what we do. Try to encourage and enlighten people, and I guess my other thoughts behind that is, you know, just how do you move around, you know, because we always talk about strength in numbers, but you know, sometimes if I got to do it by myself because I don't have other like-minded people, then so be it, you know. And does that become a lonely journey for you sometimes?
Yes, but I will say this. I mean, I believe in strength and numbers, and I believe in the power of being of one accord and agreement.
Okay.
But I also know that 1% of the world's population controls 99% of the wealth.
Mm. Yep. True.
So we have to see things in a different perspective. I think a lot of times we're waiting for the masses to catch on to something, and we think we need everybody to agree and everybody to understand in order to make a change. But we see what that 1% can do, just being 1%.
Mm.
So it may seem like a quote-unquote lonely journey, but the point is it doesn't take a lot of people to shift it. It doesn't take a lot of people to shift it. It just takes some people who know what they know and do what they do and see what they see and aren't afraid to shift it. But it doesn't take a lot of them. Never did. All the revolutions
yeah.
that were begun were not begun by the masses. They were begun by a minority.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It was always
exactly.
a small number of people, a tiny little nucleus. And eventually, you know, you got, you know, electrons and protons, you know, started to gravitate around the nucleus, you know, a little bit. But it was always just a few people. It started with a very solid core, a very tight circle. There was a lot of density in that. You know what I'm saying? And the density
mm-hmm.
created the gravity and drew people to it. But it never took a lot of people because the key is the masses are going to follow the strength, which is why when you kill
right.
the head, everybody else scatters because it was
right.
the head that can control the masses. So it's a matter of
yes.
you getting your stuff so tight and you getting your core so tight and you living that thing that people actually want what you have. And like you were saying, like, how do you change people? I'm like so I guess, opposite of what people think. Like, people always think, like, you need numbers and you got to get people to agree. No, you got to get your family right.
Right.
That's always going to be the key. That's always going to be the key, no matter what. Strong families, strong community, period.
Right.
You can't
right.
have strong
right.
communities without strong families. And that's what we're missing.
Right.
We want to pass legislation. We want to get out in March. We want to have causes. It doesn't matter because everything you build is going to fall apart when you don't have the family as a foundation
yeah.
for what you want to do. So I just think
wow.
it's important for people to do their first work. Go back and do your first work.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have these children. You have these family members. Repair these
mm-hmm.
relationships. Heal these breaches.
What?
Handle your business at home first before you go out
yeah.
the street trying to change the world. I think it's garbage. I think we do some really backwards things. Your home situation
wow.
is raggedy and lacking, and you out in the streets trying to make change and change the world. No, baby. It's never going to work that way. And
right.
I think that's what we so often do, and then we try to discount the importance of parenting and modeling by saying, but they're making such a big change, a big difference in the world. So you sacrifice your children for strangers.
Yeah.
I've never jived with that. Like, that never made sense to me. Like, I'm going to invest in my children more than I will invest in people I have no idea who they are, and they have no investment in me. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. And I think we get so extroverted, you know, as far as how we outsource our gifts, talents, abilities, and time. And this society has something to do with training us to do that by how, you know, they structure the 40-hour work week and keep the kids away from
right.
the parents and schools 8 to 10 hours a day. And so we sort of get programmed subconsciously not to place as much importance on our children and our families as we should. But we know that you cannot have a strong community without strong families. And as long as our shit families are weak or non-existent, as long as there's no structure, as long as there's no head, as long as there's no protection, as long as there's no guidance, as long as there's no systems, as long as there's no rites of passage, as long as there is nothing but, like, the toxic culture that somebody else gave us and told us was ours, it don't matter how much political work you do because the people
wow.
are not strong enough to hold it up and sustain it.
Yeah.
So I just think we need to do our first work. It's great to have a bunch of causes to champion, but nothing ever
yeah.
sticks because the family has to support everything.
Mm. I tell you, that is so powerful because, you know, I go to these different schools and I try to mentor these people. And one of the things that the family isn't there. And so when we've done things where we became these big brothers and mentors in these family situations where they lost a loved one here or there, or someone just left, you know, the father is no longer there, the mother left, or, you know, used to be a big brother that would help and fill in, and now they're gone for whatever reason that may be. And so we try to, you know, fill those gaps and do as much as we can. But like you said, you know, you got so many people going out there fighting these causes. And at any given time, if they decide they want to attack that person that's fighting these causes and they attack them some kind of way and they know that they don't have a strong family, they're all over the place in what they do. And I find problems with that because there's so many people that are out there that I know that, you know, just like you said, that family structure is not there. And when you want to be that example, so if you look back, you look at, I'm just going to go back to Martin Luther King. I mean, he had a wife, he had children, Malcolm X. And so, I mean, the family was there. They knew what everybody had to do. And everybody was training their kids on, I mean, the circumstances and everything. I don't even think there was much different than what it is today.
Nope.
You know, I just think that people just look at it a different way. And so, you know, they wear these masks and they believe that it looks like this. But, no, it's worse. It is worse to me because, you know, in Wisconsin or Milwaukee is like, the worst place for black people in the world. And that's by design. That's not anything that, I mean, that was purposefully. And we keep looking at these different solutions from these people that are not like-minded, and just because they might look like us don't mean they're for us. You know, they've been assimilated into this way of thinking. And, you know, just like, you know, they tell you you need 8 hours sleep in order to go to school and get a good education. You need to have nutrition, eat right, this and that. I believe in some of that. But I just don't know too many people that have been doing so much good work and so forth that sleep 8 hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, and but at the same time, I think some of that is just a trap. If I can get you to sleep 8 hours, you're not going to be listening to these stocks and stuff like that, because the stock market is hit real hard at 4 o'clock in the morning. You should be up, getting prepared, living and setting all that stuff up. You know, it's so many things that happen at these times where they're telling you that you need to sleep. And then, like you were talking about the food, I mean, we're, like, supposed to be the richest country in the world, and but we eat the most processed food, and we have the most unhealthy people. You know, on the planet.
Yep.
And so, you know, and we keep people in the hospital. I mean, for profit. You know, when you look at places like Africa, you know, and I'll take Ghana, for example, and they don't have tons of hospital. And one of the reasons is because they believe in teaching you how to live healthy and make healthy choices with your life. And so, you know, when you're talking about your health is your wealth, and that's one of the things that I think about. Whereas, but most people, they just believe in so much of what's being said. And I'm just going to, and I'm not like jumping all over the place, but I'm just in regards to lies. So when you talk about everybody's kind of jumping on this bandwagon about Ukraine and what's going on there and what Putin is doing and stuff like that, I'm like, Putin has been doing what he's been doing ever since he's been here. And we've been in bed with this guy making deals, and you know, and all of a sudden people are complaining because our gas prices are going up because we're like, okay, we're not going to do business with you guys anymore and stuff because you're killing these people. We've been doing all kind of business and supporting them, you know, and it's just crazy for everything that's going on and how and the way that we look at it. You know, I mean, because it's the winner's point of view, so to speak. I mean, because we get to say all these things, but you know, we really have to learn our history and know what's really going on, because that's a 30-year war between Ukraine and Russia and so forth. You know,
mm-hmm.
And there's so many other things that's going on that they're not talking about. I just look at the coverage, the news, I can't think of the guy. What's the comedian that has the show, light complexion guy?
Trevor Noah. Trevor Noah.
And he was talking about the people how they were talking about the black students, the Indian students, and they weren't letting them cross and go to Poland and, you know, and get sanctuary and stuff. And he was saying that these students, that in some of the news broadcasts that they were showing from Ukraine and other places, and they were talking about these people like they were refugees and they were troubled people and all this and that, and they bring $500 million in revenue to Ukraine a year.
Yeah.
And they had made a point in telling them that you're not leaving. And if you do try to leave, you'll be leaving at your own risk if you try to cross the border and stuff and try to get here. And they even shot at them. You know, but they're not talking about that kind of stuff. And I'm saying, so the media, they know about all this kind of stuff. And so 95% of what we hear is from people that, you know, they want to put this narrative out there, and this is what we kind of follow. And it's the same thing with everything else. And so, like I said, when you talk about, you know, so now you got all these people that want to jump on this bandwagon, you know, like what was the, I don't know, what was the kid that, and what was his name? You remember the Miller Strong slogan that they put out when the Anthony Farrell?
I don't remember the slogan that it was, but you know.
It was Miller Strong. It was Miller Strong. It was Miller Strong because he had killed five people. He had killed five people that had been harassing him. And not only, I mean, they didn't just harass him at work, they were harassing him at his house. And he had got on the news, on the radio. I mean, some people from Miller, employees, had got on the radio and talked about it and said that, you know, they were harassing these guys. In Milwaukee, at the time it was Chief Morales, had said they did an investigation and found no anything that supports that there was anything racial or anything that went on that this guy just snapped and just went off and shot and killed five people and then, you know, killed himself. And, but the not telling the truth. And so the cover-up was then everybody, as far as doing this investigation and putting this information out there, you know, like if a plane crashes, you know, you want to look at the black box, you know, and make sure that, you know, this is not going to happen again. We see what went wrong in this mess, but we make sure that this doesn't happen again. So this is what we do. At Miller, they didn't want to look at that black box. And so right away, it was this big cover-up, all these different people talking about Miller Strong, and they had these T-shirts that they were selling and putting out and doing all these fundraisers for the families and stuff like that. But, you know, there was something that went wrong in regards to how these people were treating a person there. And so if you're not addressing that, then this is not going to change. And so much of what we're dealing with today, like so when we look about all this violence that goes on, you know, the suicide, and I'm still trying to figure out what happened with the Miss America that jumped off the what is that, in 2094 in New York on, what, February 3rd of 2022? And I'm like, what was it? What pressured her, you know? I mean, what was she going through? You know, and so we got so many of our people that are committing suicide. The suicide rate has went up in Wisconsin. I just, you know, I got the numbers from, I think it was 300 and something in 2019, and then in 2020 was close to 580 something, you know, and the numbers just keep going up, you know, and why is that? You know, so when you talk about your health is your wealth and people just not knowing who they are and not appreciating just so many different things and just the how they look at things and the information they receive, how they, you know, how things are being, I don't know. It's just so much that keeps people spinning around, you know, as far as how you can discipline your kids, you know, and the things that they put on TV. And, I mean, I don't know what to watch sometimes. I mean, you know, if I got a kid in the house and stuff like that, say, oh, here, you know, go watch. I got to sit there and watch that TV with them and make sure they, I mean, because it's so many different things that they're putting out there, and I think that's part of the contamination process as well. You know, I mean, it's just so much junk that's going on out there. And I don't know. I feel for the upcoming parents that aren't, and you're absolutely right. You know, I said reading is powerful, but I know that's not the only thing. It's just so many different things, and there are so many people that don't read, but yet they are very knowledgeable in so many different areas, and you know they put that information out there. So I just appreciate. Did you do anything specifically? I mean, were you do you teach anywhere, or I mean, what do you do? I mean, you're a performer as well, right?
Yes, I actually am. I have a performance I'm going to be performing with Tanya Reed on Saturday at Bar Central, 804 East Center Street, and it's free admission. That's Saturday. But I'm telling you, this is what I have found to be most successful for me. I pour into my children as much as I can. I spend a nice amount of time with my children. And I also do creative expression and workshops. I do work in the schools sometimes, so I do get to touch children. So that's fun. That's important. I appreciate the opportunity to do that and to do what I can to mentor people, you know, on my own or as people send them to me or as I come in contact with people. But I just, like I said, there is strength in numbers, but the strength in numbers is more about delegating tasks, you know, and building a support system and a network. But it's the each one teach one, man. It's whoever you come in contact with. It's the smile. It's the hug. It's the hey little girl when you see somebody or you look cute or you know, it's the small things you do just as a result of you being who you are and just embodying love in that moment. You know, that's the powerful thing. Like the powerful thing is just is how you are when you encounter people, man. It's like, I mean, it seems like, I mean, I understand the purpose and the use for platforms and all that. I promise you I do.
Yeah.
But
right.
It's much easier for things to get lost in translation when you're in a position where you're trying to, like, reach a lot of people doing a lot of things. And I get it. I understand the use for it. That's why I'm writing these daggone books, because I know that there are things I need to leave with the world, you know. And there are things that I have to give because they were given to me. So I get that. But I also do. I really, really value one-on-one personal contact. I value small groups. I value the things in private that no one sees. You know what I'm saying? I value that. That's what a revolution is right there. The revolution is not in televised. It's not on the news.
Right,
it's
right,
not proud.
Right.
It's not popular. Like, I don't want to be a part of any of that stuff. Like, I stay away from that stuff because that's not where I find the most value in the work, you know, just by loving people. Mm-hmm. I just feel like, you know, you love people, you share your truth, you share your experience with those who demand that of you, in a sense where, like, you come across people that are going through things or who are encountering things, and if you have something to impart, if there's a part of your journey that you can be transparent about that will help them or facilitate healing in that sense, then that's what you do, you know. You freely give, and you have freely received. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of times when people have poured into me, you know, when I needed it, and I remember, I am so very well acquainted with my moments of transformation. I'm so well acquainted with my moments of transformation. I never, you know, neglect to bring that to my mind. Like, I remember when somebody said those words to me. I remember when somebody did this thing that just took me to a different level, that made me, that pulled me out of my darkness, or that showed me something different about myself, or that helped me to see something else from a different perspective. Like, I remember those things. So it's like, for me to be able to be a gift and give that to somebody else, man, that's everything. That's purpose, you know?
Wow.
So, you know, it comes as it comes. I'm not necessarily going to hide no more, but I don't seek the spotlight in that instance. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes. You know, so many people, they do seek the spotlight, and they're not getting the work done. But and a lot of people, I mean, it's just what they do, because that's just nature of politics, the way they operate. And, you know, the work that you do, and I'm just wondering, you know, with all the violence that goes on, you said you get a chance to engage with people in the school system at different times. Have you ever been in a situation where you got to talk to some people and give them some advice, and especially these women and these relationships where they seem to always pick someone that abuses them, whether it's financially, physically, you know, psychologically? I mean, it happens. And, I mean, have you had the opportunity to mentor some young ladies, or has that ever happened with you where you got a chance to, you know, speak with some people and share those, you know, some information or some thoughts in regards to relationships like that?
I have, and I do. And first of all, I find that we are overly sexualized people in an overly sexualized country. And there are so many things where we are immature and so many areas where we seek to have experiences that are outside of our understanding just by the nature of the culture and what's profitable at this time. So they tell you all the time that sex sells in America is a corporation. So America's going to push what makes money. So everything that is a problem is a moneymaker for America. Things don't stop being a problem until they stop making money for America. So there are all kinds of thought processes and programs that are being pushed on our children, especially the whole Disney character syndrome. You know, they always have the Disney relationship boy-girl shows. They put them on the Disney Channel. The kids watching them from, you know, age basically infancy on up, and I think it creates a false narrative of relationships and the appropriate ages to engage in relationships because so much is lost by boys and girls trying to be sexually active with each other at such a young age because they don't even know their bodies. They have no knowledge base to try to engage with another person with. So it's just that we live in this culture that normalizes and promotes so many unhealthy behaviors and thought processes that we just have to really reinforce things in our children. And then there's the other part of it that's, like, really, really important. It's just that, like, you don't always connect the same with all of your children, you know? I'm sure you, like, had an uncle or an aunt, and you was her baby. You know what I mean?
Yes,
like,
yes.
Like, oh, they just loved you. Like, your mama might have been like, look, I don't know what's wrong with that boy, or your daddy might have been like, he's just too much for me.
Right,
right,
exactly.
And I don't understand why they like that. But then you had an auntie, or you had a cousin, or you had an uncle, or you had somebody that was like, I get that little boy or that little girl. And he can come over here and kick it with me, or he can stay with me. We have lost so much of that because the reality of it is, the joy of the community is in you discovering these jewels that you didn't necessarily even birth. But you make these connections with these people, and you're able to pour into these people that you didn't even necessarily have to give birth to that might not be biologically yours, but you're able to recognize you see yourself in other people. You see the value in other people when you see the value in yourself. And then you can say, hey, why don't you sit under me? I know you like to draw. I know you like to sew. I know that boy, oh, he can speak so well. Why don't you come over with me and listen to me when I'm giving presentations, or, you know, all these different things. And so when we don't have intrinsic value, or when we don't see intrinsic value in ourselves, then we look for what is outside to tell us who and what we are. And so I think that's the crux of a relationship problem. Like, we have children who do not believe in or see the value of themselves, and so they need boys and or girls to validate them and tell them they're beautiful, to tell them that they're loved, to tell them they're important and that they're special. And so if we were filling these emotional needs in children, they would be less likely to have such a tendency to engage in these relationships. And I'll tell you this much. I remember when I used to do a lot of I was in my children, when they were going to a certain school, I was at the school a whole lot. Like, they said I lived at the school. I was always at the school when my children were, like, in kindergarten, first, second, third. I was just there. I was always at the school. And I would see children, I'm talking about babies, I'm talking about 5, 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old boys and girls who, when their parents would drop them off, they would run to their mamas and try to give them hugs, and their mothers would push them and be like, go on, boy, get up off of me. You see what I'm saying? Like, this is the norm for children.
Yeah.
Children are not embraced and hugged and kissed every day and told, I love you, and you're so beautiful and you special and you important. So when you have generations, plural, of children who have not been properly loved and mothered and fathered, they are going to seek those relationships. You don't lose the desire to be loved. You don't lose the desire to be seen. You don't lose the desire to be useful. And so if our children do not feel loved, seen, and useful in their home environments and situations, then they will search for somebody to tell them all the things that they're missing out on at home. And it's not like a jab at the parents per se. It's just you understanding that sometimes we get so caught up in, this is my child and my house and my rules and what I say goes, and can't nobody tell me nothing about my child. And we get into this situation where we just really isolate our children, but we need each other in a healthy way, because somebody sees something in your child that you don't, and that's okay, because that's the way it was designed. Like, we are all a part of the puzzle.
Right.
But when
you keep
your child from those influences, you are also robbing your child of somebody who can pour into them and who can nurture something in them that you just don't see. It's just like me talking. I can tell the truth and I can say things that are accurate, but everybody is not going to hear my voice. Everybody isn't tuned to my frequency where they can hear what I have to say. What you have to say is meant for certain people, and it doesn't matter.
Right.
You hear, see it with your children all the time. You can tell your child something for 10 years straight. I promise you can say it the same way. You can even try different ways, and you can tell them jokers the same thing for 10 years straight.
Right.
And you can be in the living room and have the TV be on, and baby, some random creature who ain't never laid eyes on your child
can
say the same thing that you've been saying for the last 10 years, and all of a sudden, a light bulb goes off in your child, and they be like, wow, man, I never really thought about it like that. And you sitting over there thinking, I've been saying that for the last 10 years, and I can't believe, because you know what? Your voice is tuned to somebody. Somebody can only hear your frequency concerning certain things. So it doesn't matter how many times you say it, they literally can't hear you until that proper voice comes. And so when we isolate ourselves and we isolate our children, we rob them of the ability to hear the frequency that was meant for them. To be exposed to the frequency that they are tuned to. So there's so much, you know what I'm saying? There's so much imbalance, but all this stuff is just symptoms. It's all symptomatic. The core is family, foundation, love. I just think that is the core of it all. And all the rest of the stuff we're seeing are just symptoms of it, because we are a community people.
Yeah.
Because we are, you know, that's the way things were meant to be. We're supposed to be interdependent. We're supposed to be interdependent people. You know, like I said, we're all pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. Like, we all need each other. But if we're taught to believe that we can do everything on ourselves and by ourselves and we don't need each other, then we don't align ourselves in ways to be used and to be useful. So,
So what church do you preach at on Sunday?
You better go somewhere. My children told me I can't have no church. So we good.
Oh my!
You know, we good. They told me I can't do that.
You would have if you walked into church and they had you just give a sermon, whatever, and stuff like that. That church, you'd have 10,000 people in there the first week. Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to tell you an interesting story, because I'm going to stop you right there. Like, listen, I have been, quote-unquote, in the ministry before, and I have been removed from the ministry before because I dealt with children and I told children the truth. So they don't want me, and I'm okay with them not wanting me, because for them to want me would mean something was wrong with me in my eyes. It's okay for you not. I get why you said no, because then I mess up structures. You know what I'm saying? And my thing is, not my job. That's not my. I don't feel at all like my job or my position is to be an illusion shatterer. You know, it's like when you wake people. It's just like you know, people talk about you sleepy. These people sleep and they need to be woke up. It's not your job to wake anybody up. That's not your job. You know, if you know for certain, if someone has requested that you wake them up, that's when you wake them up. But you know what happens to people in a normal life when you wake them too suddenly. Some people get violent.
Right,
some people can't function because they sleep deprived. It wasn't time for them to wake up. They needed to heal, so they can't heal properly because they were awakened too quickly. Some people are sleepwalkers.
Yes.
If you disrupt them, it could make an accident happen, or they could end up hurting themselves. Like, you don't know. Like, you got to chill out, and you got to work within your own realm, and you got to have discernment and move in love, because it's not your job to make everybody aware of the truth you see.
Wow.
Some people need to sleep a little bit longer. They need the rest. You don't know what that person's soul is going through. Let them be where they are and be at peace in that moment, and maybe that peace will lead them to a place where they're more ready and able to hear what you have to say. but you got to learn to leave people alone. And I learned that, like, sometimes you can be, like, so overzealous. Like, you get a hold of a fact or a truth, and you just want to tell everybody, and you just want to push it on them, and you can do more harm than good because everybody's not ready to hear what you say. And that's okay because everybody isn't on at the same place at the same time, and that's perfectly fine. Ain't no judgment attached to that. It's just that we have to go where we are wanted, stay where we appreciate it. You know, like the Bible was like, you know, you go in peace. And if they don't receive you, you shake the dust off and keep moving. It don't say you try to force them to believe what you believe.
Right.
No. You drop it. You plant a seed. Another one water. Another one fertilize. Then you got the sunlight. You know, it's a process. Like, just play your part. And I think it's like we really think that we can save people or that we have to save people from things. And it's all a process. Everybody deserves to be able to come into an understanding in their own time organically because less harm is caused that way. You know what I'm saying? You can't when you fight against somebody's will, that creates an internal war. You know, it's like if my whole life has been built on believing a certain thing, and now you come and force your knowledge into my life, now I can't, with a good conscience, work at my job anymore because of the information you gave me. I can't, with a good conscience, be with my husband or wife anymore because of this information that you forced upon me. So it's that we have to just be mindful and be respectful of other people's right to believe and think how they feel. And when people are warm and receptive to you, that's when you go a little bit further. That's when you give a little bit more, you know. But you just don't force. You can't force stuff on people because force implies violence automatically. So anytime you try to force something on somebody, that is, you are violating their will. You are exacting violence upon that person. You don't force things on people. So I just chill out from that because I see what kind of damage being dogmatic and forcing ideologies on people has done. So, like, I just, hey, when you see me, you see me. If you feel me, you feel me. I love it. If you contact me and you like, you know, when you were talking about this or can I meet with you or can I talk with you, hey, let's do that. But as far as me trying to make somebody believe or trying to convert somebody to my way of thought, no, baby, nah, I won't do that.
Well, I tell you, I love social media so much because I wouldn't get a chance to hear you like that because you drop so many jewels on Facebook, and I don't know where else you may speak, but I know I'm going to listen to you Saturday night, so I'll be there this Saturday.
Thank
and,
you, sir.
But,
appreciate it.
You know, it is a blessing, and it is a blessing to all that know you and hear you. I thank you so much for allowing me to engage with your son and, you know, and just share with him some of the things that, you know, were taught to me. And like you said, each one teach one. And just listening to you, my wife is here, my daughter, everybody's
hey,
to you. I mean, because.
Hi, Sabrina.
Hey. And you know what? And that's what it all is. I mean, we are supposed to be family. And like you said, you know, that connection and some of what these kids are missing, because I witnessed the same thing. And when my wife had passed away and my kids were in the schools, I could have worked and made more money and, you know, and bought some things and this and that, but I needed to be with my kids. And so I worked as an aide in the schools, at both the schools. And so I was an aide at Willow Glen, and I was an aide at Deer Creek. And I was up in that school all the time, even when they were in high school. So because I wanted them to know, you ain't messing with my kids. And they got a daddy that's here, you know. And so everybody knew who my faith. They knew that you can't mess with Mr. Kraft's kids. You know, and I want that for everybody, you know, because it's like, and when I say I want that for everybody, because, you know, a lot of people, you know, they say, well, you know, that kid, just leave him alone. No, that kid needs that love, like you said, because if that kid doesn't get it, and then that kid grows up and he does something out of love, not because he doesn't understand love, because all he understands is the hatred and the other ugly things that people have been doing to him, and he does something ugly to one of our loved ones or something like that. But it could have been prevented if we would have intervened some way and showed this person and engaged with this person a certain kind of way.
Yeah.
So I really feel you because I've witnessed that and I've seen that when I've done I used to do MPS from the schools, and I was a fire ed teacher in some of these schools, and I had it was at an elementary school, and I had these young kids, you know, like 5 and 6 years old, and you know they're talking about shooting other kids in the classroom, and getting into fights, and I mean just the crazy fights that they got into and stuff like that. But I mean it was just something, but they need that engagement. But you know, so all of a sudden I'm giving them hugs, I'm doing different things and stuff, and so I got kids not even in my class, you know, coming out of their social studies class, running to the gym room so that I can give them a hug. And so
yes. It
is so important what you said. When I really get what you mean, what you say when you said people need that love, and there's so many different ways.
They will hang on to you for dear life.
Oh yes.
Man, they come, yeah. They will find you just because they need that positive human contact.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these children are not being loved. They are not seeing affection.
Yeah.
They're not being held. Like, and it's so sad because it's all of them. Like, they will line up to wait to hug you.
Yeah.
They'd be like, come, can I have a hug? Can I have a hug? Can I have a hug? Where's my hug? Where's my hug? And you should, and it's just like, it's heartbreaking, but at the same time, it's like, I'm glad that I can feel that position. I'm glad that I am in a space where I can actually give that, because that is so valuable. You know what I'm saying? Like, people don't understand, like, until you work in the schools and you see the kids, people don't understand. They don't really think about it to that extent, I don't believe. I don't believe parents a lot of times think about, like, how much affection you are showing your children and how it really affects them mentally and physically, even from their ability to pay attention in class and to connect with other children. So, it's real. Like, your presence matters. Like, presence is so important. Like, you just, like you're saying, like, they knew, like, I'm here. And the fact that people have a visual reference that's their parent, and that speaks volumes in and of itself. And so many children don't have that presence. So many children don't have, like, a father that the teacher can put a face to and be like, I'm calling your dad if you don't act right. You know what I'm saying? And so that's not even a possibility to try to use that as behavioral modification or for reinforcement. So these things are important. Like, I love the concept of us being a village. I love that. I love that.
I want to see the reality
of us coming back to that place, but there's a lot of personal self-work we have to do to get ourselves to be able to be functional in a village where we will be good village people, so to speak, where we will be respectful and kind and compassionate towards each other, and we will understand our places. And, you know, it's a lot of just, it's all personal work. And I think that's where I always go back to it. It doesn't matter what it is. It's all going to begin and end with you. It's all a personal job. It's all an in-house project. Like, that's how you change the world. You change the world by changing yourself. Like, that's all that's ever going to work ever in life, is you change you.
Yeah.
And when you change you, my God, wonderful things start happening.
Well, you know, that's one of the reasons why I'm so big into teaching martial arts and so forth. Because when we do that, you know, like in the karate schools and this and that, we call each other a family. And we work from that, and each one teach one, and the next person, you know, well, now he's your, you know, this person, you're responsible for his growth, his learning and everything like that. You're responsible for this teaching, and so we do that in the class, and we teach that, and I think we've lost these codes of conduct, and we're not growing up with a lot of these things because we don't have that bonding, that family situation that you were talking about, because everything is just so scattered, you know, and because even when people live in the same house, you know, they're locked into the internet and so many other different things and stuff like that, so that connection still isn't there. I mean, so it's just so much that needs to be done in regards to showing that love and stuff like that, and, you know, because, like, a lot of times, I know years ago, I used to be like, hey, nobody, no phones at the table, no phones on the trip. We get in the car, just put them down. You know, I mean, we can talk to each other. We right here in front of each other. Don't text me because you're in the back seat and I'm in the front seat of the car. Those things have happened.
Right.
I'm like, what? What is this? I didn't even know how to text when I got this stuff. But I also remember you have to go somewhere. So let me shut up. And I just want some closing thoughts for you in regards to just so many things that you talked about, just life and living, being healthy. I mean, I think one of the most powerful things that you said, you know, was just showing the love, each one teach one. And, I mean, you do that on a daily basis. I also want to just tell where you're going to be at Saturday night. And for those of us in the Milwaukee area, and, something else I had on my mind. But go ahead, because I know you only got a few minutes before you get out of here.
I'm going to be at Bar Centro, and that's on Center Street. It's, I believe it's 804 East Center Street.
Yeah.
It's either 804, 840. I really can't see right now because
I think
I don't have the flyer in front of me. It's 804?
Yes.
Okay. So that's basically it. And it's free admission. We always encourage tipping. Tanya Reed is an awesome jazz vocalist. She is definitely a treasure in Milwaukee. She also teaches at the Conservatory of Music. So she's the truth. She'll be singing jazz, and I'll be doing some spoken word. And, you know, we'll be having a lot of fun. We'll be having a lot of fun. So her sister's going to come and do some monologue. So it's just a bunch of women getting together, celebrating women for Women's History Month. And, So, yeah, but
I
just,
okay
always encourage people just to, like, love themselves. Huh?
You just said it's going to be a bunch of women. Is it okay for me to be in there? Am I going to be, like, a sore thumb in there?
Oh, absolutely not. I'm just saying the show is three women.
Oh, okay.
The show is three women. Okay. So we're just celebrating women. No, it's going to be anybody who comes. It's going to be men there, women there. No,
okay.
It's always a really nice mix.
I just, because some people in some places is different. You know, I want to make sure because I don't want to upset anybody and stuff like that. It's but no, I know it's going to be a great time, and I get to hear you and the other people there, and so that's awesome. And I just look forward to it, man. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I tell you,
yeah, so we're gonna
I just thank you a lot. We have to do this again. Where
well,
I
you
can,
know, just let me know.
No, I will. Believe me, we're going to do some other things. You know, I had this breakdown tonight, and that's just my computer just went bad on me. That's it.
Yeah,
and
technology
so
now is
I just
mama,
gotta,
you know.
Yeah, I just got to go get me another computer and stuff. As a matter of fact, I just got this one and got it cleaned up and everything about 6 months ago, and it's acting up. So I'm not going to take chances anymore and stuff like that because I can't have somebody like you on the show and have a malfunction.
It's
so
all love, and I understand,
Yeah, so I'm glad you've been with us and, you know, hung in there and stuff like that. So it is 7:23, so I will say, you know, so long and thank you, and we will do this again most definitely, and just say hello to the family and nothing but love for you and
thank you.
Everybody else, and if I can, I'm always a phone call away.
Thank you, and I know that to be true, and I appreciate you having me.
All right, well, thank you.
All right, peace. Y'all have a great evening.
All right, thank you. All right. All right, you just listened to Kendra Don, and she dropped some jewels, and I'm just overwhelmed. I'm just going to have to play this back and listen, and it was just some powerful words of wisdom and life experiences, and, you know, when she talked about it as being a kid, you know, when her parents, you know, they had pennies on the table and stuff like that, and they come up with a new word, you know, and they grab the penny and stuff when they could, you know, they would come up with a new word and they could define it and so forth. You could use that new word and stuff like that, and they would read books and, you know, at a very young age, you know, 3-4 years old, you know, they were able to read. And, I mean, And but it's not just everything. It's not just reading. It's just total engagement, being free thinkers. But the reading, she talked about how it opened up her mind and stuff like that. But one of the other things she talked about was that, you know, she could recognize when people weren't being honest. I guess the best word is that she can recognize a liar. and so if you are a liar, you know, she picked up on those things. And but one of the things that was good about that is she understood that lies could jeopardize your faith, could jeopardize a lot of things that you do. And so that was very important. And I've just never heard anybody put it so well. I mean, like I said, she's such a common sense and straight to the point, so spot on about just so many issues. And when I think about people and they talk about all the programs and what we got to do and so forth and this and that, and she talked about everything that she's talking about doing, like they do all these protests, all these marches and stuff like that, and these people that are doing these protests and marching and so, and they come back and, you know, they got broken down families themselves, you know, and they have all these different issues. And she was saying, if you don't have your house set, why are you leaving, going out on the street trying to help somebody else if your family ain't together? It's got to start in your own house. You got to have your structure. You got to have that balance in your life before you can try to help somebody balance their life. And so she made a lot of sense, and I really, I knew that from the start. Like I said, we're going to revisit and have Kenza Dawn again. I get to see her do some poetry tomorrow. Sometime tomorrow. That's going to be Saturday. So I'm looking forward to that. And she also said she wrote some books, or she's in the process of doing that. I'll get into that a little more when we have her on the show again. But that was very important. I have my daughter, I have my wife here. You guys heard Kimmy speak. Kimmy, you got anything, any thoughts from her comments and things that she said?
It was definitely very insightful, the advice and just her own experiences that she gave. Very relatable to a lot of people out here. I know a lot of times when we see things on TV or on the internet or podcasts, a lot of it doesn't relate to our everyday situation. And just hearing that, like even coming from like my own situations that I've been through, I can definitely relate. And, you know, it's just really just refreshing to hear. I definitely do appreciate all of that and her content.
I get that because, like I said, we've all had some trauma and some different things where we felt, where we didn't feel a love. And when we didn't feel a love, we ended up doing some hateful and harmful things to ourselves. Most people that I talk to, when, you know, and I mentioned that I had a conversation, we talked about suicide. I talked about an incident that happened in regards to lying. And when I was, because when she talked about lies and how much lies mess with people, I brought up the incident with Anthony Farrell with the Miller Strong thing about the incident, and they lied about saying that there was, you know, what started this incident and stuff like that. You know, it's sad that five people were killed in this situation, one of them being Anthony Farrell killing himself and the other people that were working there that were harassing him and so forth. And I'm not saying that that's the answer, but I'm saying, why would you push people to a certain point where they respond in such a way and stuff like that? And that went on for quite some time. But not to acknowledge that that was the problem. And so that is just something that plagues this country when we talk about racism, because that's what it was. And so we don't tell the truth about a lot of things that hurt and affect a lot of people in this community based on race. When you talk about, I mentioned the stuff that was going on in Ukraine, and people are talking about, you know, they made statements about these white people that are, these are news commentators and making these comments about these white, blue-eyed people. I mean, they're intelligent. They're not like these refugees. They're not like these other people that you have in these other countries and stuff like that. These are white citizens and stuff like that, blue-eyed people. And they were making that point over and over again. And so I mentioned this Trevor, Noah. He had mentioned that. There were some other people here that mentioned that and stuff. But you don't hear a lot of that on the news and stuff like that. And I said, that's damaging for people not to hear these things, because you're saying that there's no, we're bringing no value. And the ugliness of, despite all the ugly things that's happening to these people in this wartime, and you got some black and brown people that are living there that are being treated, you know, with extreme prejudice, you know, just because of who they are, and they're not involved in this incident, but they're there. And they bring, what, $500 million to that community, I mean, to that country, with the educational system and stuff like that, and the money spent and stuff like that. And that's a yearly thing, and that was documented information. So it's really something where, you know, people can disregard you as a person. And so, you know, Kendra made some points when she talked about, you know, she did things in the school system. She talked about, you know, also doing some ministry in regards to, and I just kind of threw that out there because he's such an eloquent speaker, and I was like, I'm sure you had to, you know, speak at places and do this and do that. And she said, yeah, but you know what? They didn't like that because they didn't like me telling the truth. And I could tell you, and I really understand that wholeheartedly, because there was a time when I was going to church on a regular basis, but I couldn't go there because it hurt me to listen to them not address certain things that were going on that I could see that was going on. But it was, that's not the role that they want to play. That's not the path that they want to take. They have certain guidelines in some of these churches, and I always thought that churches reflect, are supposed to reflect the issues of what's going on in people's lives today. And so if this is going on, this is what you're going to talk about. And you're going to help them with some solutions and so forth and this and that. But that's not the case because it's so political. And so everything is just framed and shaped a different kind of way. And, you know, like Kendra just kind of put that information out there. And I like how she, I mean, because the other thing she talked about is, you know, these kids, you know, like she said she, when she was working in these schools, and she said she was making sure that she would recognize these kids, let them know that she loved them, give them a hug and so forth, because she would say that the mothers, you know, would drop these kids off in school, and these kids would run up to the mother and try to get a hug, and the mother would push them away and say, go, hurry up, get out of here. You know, I mean, and I've seen those things happen, so I understand what she's talking about. But so how do you think when that kid misbehaves in school and you're wondering why? And what else is going on? You know, are they being fed right? What other issues that might be going on? Again, you know, there's a big difference. And I know that, you know, like, and I've met Kendra's family, and her kids are doing well, a well-balanced family in so many ways, shapes, and forms, very educated group of people, and they're just on top of everything. But like I said, it's a tight bond. And when I look around and I see a lot of different families, and I've been involved in so many different job situations. I was in law enforcement for years. I worked in a lot of different community jobs where I worked for NCS for a while. And I worked other jobs where I, you know, as in corrections and in group homes. And so I saw the breakdowns of a lot of families where we had a lot of these kids, and they never seem to be able to find places for some of these kids, or where they can, you know, finally find a place where they can lay their head at night, know that they're not going to be messed with, and so they can focus on the things that they needed to do, you know, learn something, read something, whatever skill set, whatever it is that they were inspired to do. They could do that, and they could have a support with them and stuff. And they had a brother, a sister, a, you know, a mom, a dad, somebody, some kind of person in that position that they could see on a regular basis that would be there for them. And so they try to create these different programs by, you know, like I said, you know, having a big brother for some of these kids that have lost parents due to violence, maybe a car accident, whatever the case may be. So you have these different programs that they reach out, big brothers, big sisters, where you go out there and you try to mentor these people. But again, a lot of these situations are the way they're run, and it really doesn't suit the way a structured family would like to do that. You know, and so, you know, the adoption process, you know, then when, you know, it's just so much involved in all of these situations. So when you look at everything that we're going through, you know, with this pandemic and now this war thing, and I'm sure it's going to affect us in so many different ways. They already talked about, you know, the gas prices are going up, so that means the food prices are going up. I mean, everything is going up, and this is part of a relationship issue, and that was our relationship with Russia. You know, so none of this stuff happened overnight. You know, like I said, the problems we've been having with different places and countries and this and that, this has been going on for umpteen years and stuff like that. So this is not just something that just came up overnight and stuff like that. But we've had these kind of relationships, and relationships are very important. And despite all the horrific things that are going on, for those of us that have a strong family, we always seem to find a way to get by. And so one of the things that so many people talk about, and I've been involved in so many different organizations, and they always talk about, let's build this village. Let's have this family. Because in Africa, the wealth, your wealth is your family. How many kids you have, all this, I mean, and you know, how you take care of your family, all these different things. I was listening to this thing. I was watching Family Feud, and Steve Harvey was talking to a young lady that was on Family Feud, and this family was from Africa. And the young lady was about 22 years old, and he told her she was really pretty, and then her brother was next to her, he was like, "What? I'm not asking to marry her, but if I did want to marry her, he said, "Oh, I'll explain to you. If you want to marry her, then you have to meet with her father, my father, and your father, and your brother. You would all meet, and we would discuss, you know, the living arrangements and so forth, and you know, maybe you might bring me so many cows and so much money here, there, and stuff like that. But it's a marriage that they would arrange. But she would first have to want to marry that person. So it's not like they forced it, you know, that kind of thing. It would be a willing arrangement. But at the same time, the family comes together. The whole family comes together and make decisions about them getting together in this relationship after certain things were established. But again, you know, you don't hear about a lot of different things like that. But if you go back far enough, you'll find there's a lot of cultures that did things that way, and where the family bond was very important, very strong. And this is where we're losing out, because we don't have that family bond. We don't have that love. We don't have that connection with our people. We got people out here on the street that are not balanced. You know, Kenza had made comments where you got some people that are sleep deprived, but you're sleepwalking, and you don't want to bump into those people, because they might go off. They might explode. You don't know what they're going to do. You know, you got people that, you know, see, I tell her that, man, I mean, the jewels that you got, the information, wow, that's important, but everybody's not tuned into her voice. So as much as she wants to say, and I think we've all been there, she gave a very valid point where I've told my kids something 1,000 times, and they look at me like, yeah, okay. And then all of a sudden they might hear it on TV from somebody else. Or somebody else might tell them the same thing, and they're like, wow, I get it. Man, why didn't I ever think about that? And I'm sitting there thinking, I just told you that. I tell you that all the time. But we are in tune with so many different people and places and things. And so it's very important that we receive messages, and we got so many different people that we are tuned into and some people that we're not tuned into. And so when people are putting out that good information, you know, and we receive that, you know, and that's just a blessing. You know, but at the same time, like I said, we also understand, you know, there's pluses and minuses. And she talks about things, and I mean, she put it out there. I mean, she understood at a very early age what a lie is. Man, I mean, to me, that was just so powerful. That was scary. I tell you, I didn't. I mean, my uncles, they used to tell me all kind of stories and things they used to do. I thought that they sailed boats and flew airplanes and came back from trips from Timbuktu or whatever. I mean, they just would tell me different things, and I believed all those things. I mean, I thought that's what they did. They actually did stuff like that. I didn't realize it just was a lie and stuff. But at the same time, some of those lies got ugly sometimes at different times and stuff, and I didn't realize that then. But later on, as I grew up, but it shaped me some kind of way, you know, from the information that I heard and stuff like that. I didn't always research it, but I had some false information in my head that made me think a certain way about certain people and certain things and stuff like that, which wasn't always possible. And so it's very important when she put that information out there, you know, to be able to recognize the lie. And when you recognize something, you know you can throw this away. I recognize that, you know, this is poison. This is not good for me. So I don't need to eat this. This is going to kill me. This is going to hurt me. This is going to make me sick. And so she put that out there, you know, when she talked about, you know, how we are so contaminated with information. We're so contaminated with how we address certain issues and so forth, you know, the things that we teach or we can't teach, and information we receive and don't receive. I mean, it's how we just explain things. You know, I mean, it's just so important to have a balanced relationship with yourself. And, you know, I can tell you there were times I had a conversation with a friend of mine, and he asked me a question that, and it's a white male, and, you know, I like to get his perspective on different things. And he said, you know, I know you always talk about, you know, how you're deprived here, there, this and that, and all this, but why are some of these black people just killing each other all the time? Why is that going on? And I said, you know, I've expressed this to you so many times. I said, first of all, let's leave it at that. I said, you talk about black people. I said, number for white people that kill each other here, you know, you're talking about 83% of white people kill white people. That's what your number is. We're in the 90%. We're in the 90%. But you never bring that up. And the media never points that out either. And so it's a narrative that's always promoted, and so much promoted in the sense that we feel that the only thing that we can do to protect ourselves is to kill somebody else that looks like us. I mean, because we have that fear. And, you know, and that's been promoted in so many negative ways, and where we become our enemies to other people that look like us that have done anything to us. You know, but we just believe that, some of them. And, you know, and that's just a sad something that happens, but at the same time, it's with every ethnic group on the planet. When you look at more Chinese people are killed by Chinese people than any other people. You know, 80% of Chinese people are killed by Chinese people. I mean, the numbers are basically the same for every ethnic group. But we focus on black people and we say it like that. And, you know, and but again, that promotes a certain narrative where everybody wants to jump on that bandwagon. You know, they don't have that conversation and bring up this stuff about serial killers or mass shooters and stuff like that, because we got about 87% of them are white males. Those are your numbers up. But that's not a conversation that they bring up and they talk about. Every now and then you may hear some things about that, but that's what our numbers look like in those situations. And so I kind of bring those things up. And then the conversation just kind of shifts. And he's a former law enforcement person too, so he does understand data and he does look at that information, and you know, and we you know, then you know, the conversation changes and we talk about some other issues and so forth. But he has some concern about me because he likes me. I'm that, you know, I get how he thinks, and he's a good guy. And but at the same time, you know, he just looked at me as being so different from the average guy. You know, I'm not as violent. I'm not this and that. I'm a good guy. I try to help. But he was conditioned to think a certain way. I know that from as being we used to work together, and we had different conversations. And he would let me know different things and stuff like that, but that was part of his upbringing. You know, not just society-wise. I mean, yeah, partly society-wise, but in his home life and then in his job life, in his career. You know, it was always kind of promoted the same kind of way. You know, so there's a lot of, it's not no one answer for everything. Like when myself and, you know, Kendra, we had the conversation and, you know, we talked, you know, reading, education. And and not to say that education is important. It's very important and stuff like that. But I know a lot. There's a lot of people that have come up that were very smart, educated in so many other ways with so much common sense. And they can look at things and make assessments and make good decisions based on certain things. And they can just read and pick up things. And had a better understanding than a lot of people that were book smart. And these other people had brilliance in so many other ways and stuff like that. And so I'm not taking anything from anybody that does this or that, but I'm just saying not to just shun people if this person doesn't have all these different accolades and so forth in this demand, because a lot of people, there's just so many brilliant people I know that are just well-educated people based on how they live and they engage with, they travel. They, you know, I have a friend of mine that speaks 8 different languages. They didn't go to school to learn it, they just travel. And they learn the languages just from engaging with different people and stuff like that. And they understand a lot of different things because of the communication and the travels that they had, you know, through their journey and stuff like that. I mean, that's an education in itself. And you see how other people live and, you know, you get to understand why they do some of the things that they do from different points of view. And, you know, that's like one of the other things that Kendra had also mentioned, like, biblically and stuff, you know, somebody can quote something and stuff, and thou shalt not this, that, or whatever, and stuff like that, and, you know, a lot of people can interpret that in so many different ways, And so you got these different groups that said, well, we look at it like this, and we look at it like this. We're Orthodox, we're Baptist, we're Lutheran, we're whatever. You know, you got all these different denominations, and I'm not saying one is worse or better than the other, but there's a difference. And in regards to how people receive information, how they put that information out. And, you know, and so there's some, we live in a state of confusion, you know, where a lot of our people, you know, they don't know what to think or what's really right, what's really wrong. And so when we think about, you know, the suicides and the harmful things that people are doing to themselves and other people, you know, like one of the things she talked about when she said, like, some people are sleepwalking, you know, and you don't want to wake them up. You know, you could trigger something violent. It's just so many different things that we need to be aware of, and we need to have a sense of balance among ourselves, you know, how we engage with people, how we live in our own housing, in our own self. If you don't know yourself, if you don't take the time to take care of yourself, how do you help someone else? You know, I need to condition myself. I need to eat better. I need to do different things so that I can move around better. Now that I can move around better, I can do more things. And as I do more things, and I get to a certain point where I get very comfortable, very good, where I'm very functional. I'm more than very functional. You know, I'm very good at things. And where I'm just noticing, you can see the differences. They see the energy that I put out there. They're like, man, where are you getting that? And I can share that with them. I can share that because they see it. They see it. I'm living by my example. And they want some of that. So I'm willing to share that. And that's what I like so much about Kendra Dawn. And she agreed to come back and be on the show again. And she just had so many jewels that she dropped. And I can listen to her just all day long. Matter of fact, I do. I go to Facebook and, you know, I see the smile on her face and she just tells you stuff. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. Man, I just hope millions of people just listen to her. I mean, because life would be so different if people would just listen to her. And there's so many other people that say good things and put stuff out there, but, you know, there is a difference when you look at somebody and you really hear the passion, the sincerity, the realness in what's being said. There's a difference when people say it just because this is a good line to put out. This is something that's going to give me some life. This is something that's going to, I'm not doing it for that. I'm doing it to help somebody become a better person, give them some good information, something that they can use. It might lift them. It might save their life. This is why I do what I do. This is why I put it out there like that. And this is why I do the shows that I do. Because I want somebody to reach and touch somebody some kind of way and move them to make a change for the better. That's it. That's all we try and do. I thank Doc Will Rogers for setting me up with this situation. You know, I was on the Time for Awakening network on the Black Reality Think Tank. I want to thank Copa Council of Milwaukee. I was doing shows. I started to do it there. And then I moved over to the Blog Talk Radio System Network. And again, this is called Warrior's Way, Continuing the Fight. Our Gmail is warriorswave101@gmail.com, warriorswave101@gmail.com. And this is called Continuing the Fight. So if you got questions or comments, you can email us again at warriorswave101@gmail.com. And our call-in number, because this is a call-in format, the call-in number is 516-418-5674. I repeat, 516-418-5674. Tonight, we had some technical difficulties, so I wasn't able to you know, do a lot of the other things that the format that we normally come up with that we provide for you. So I wasn't able to take some calls in or anything like that tonight because I just, like I said, we had some technical difficulties. We'll get that taken care of very soon for the next show. So I'm going to get ready to sign off. And I thank you for joining us. I thank my guest, Kendra Dawn, and my family for being here, being part of this. My wife, Sabrina, daughter, Kimberly, my son, Xander, daughter, Lexi. So thank her for that ancestral profile on Sojourner 2. And I thank you guys for joining us. So again, thank you and good night.
Yeah.